This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
We are back. Indeed, we are. It is time for the fan shows to return here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. And first up, it is, of course, Manchester United. Yes. Now, I believe we left you on around the 22nd of December when Manchester United fell to a 2-0 defeat to Watford. It's not been too bad since then. No, a 4-1 victory over Newcastle, a brilliant way to bounce back, and then a win over Burnley 2-0 at Turf Moor. We'll forget the 2-0 defeat at Arsenal. That was fair. Mikel Arteta just needed a game, didn't he, to start his managerial tenure with a win. He's got that out of the way. We gave them that one. And then yesterday, the thriller, the game of the season at Molineux. Wolves 0, Manchester United 0. Okay, perhaps we won't talk about it. Should we talk about it? We have to talk about it. Yeah, we're going to talk about it. We've got Ben Senior here, big Manchester United aficionado and fan, of course. Ben, hello.
Evening, mate. How are we?
Yeah, good, buddy. Did you have a good New Year and Christmas? We'll get these pleasantries out of the way to start with.
I had a very good break, yeah. Nice to see the family. It's always a bit hectic around Christmas and New Year. Got to see a bit of football as well on Boxing Day. I had to sign up for my free trial of Amazon Prime just to get all that.
Of course. I think everybody is now thinking, oh no, is the 30 days up? Quick, cancel.
Cancel it.
Cancel.
But no, back. Did you have a good one though?
Yeah, did all the usual stuff. I've been here, to be fair. I've not left. I've been here. I had a nice little Christmas day off and I had a wedding on New Year's Eve, which was lovely. But then it's been shows, mate. Yeah. The life of a broadcaster.
Yeah, you've got your sleeping bag in the corner.
Yeah, we kip when we need to. But no, it's been fun and good to be back. Good to be back with the fan shows, of course, as well. Like I said, we ended on the 2-0 defeat to Watford, the David De Gea debacles, you might say. But they turned it around, the boys. Of course, the 4-1 win over Newcastle, that was relatively emphatic. Good win at Burnley, not the easiest place to go, of course. And then the defeat against Arsenal left everybody scratching their heads again, going, we cannot get consistency. So your perception of United, before we get on to Wolves, your perception of the festive fixtures?
Like you said, I think we ground out a few victories, especially that one against Burnley, the way we did really dig in deep and get some out of that when we probably didn't have our best performance, which is what you're looking for, especially when we've played the lower teams this season. But it's a new year, a new decade, but it seems to be the same old inconsistencies this season for United. And that game against Arsenal, I'm just scratching my head thinking, what is going on? Like, is it just because Arsenal were in the bottom half of the league and we just can't perform against bottom half teams? But it's just, there's something lacking at the minute. And it just seems we're just struggling to get them magical three victories in a row. We just can't seem to get them.
We can't, can we? Remember the days when United used to get three titles in a row? That was good, wasn't it? I do have to say that when we were previously on, United were in eighth after that defeat to Watford. 7 points adrift of the top four that I keep happening to mention that you know I don't like mentioning, but 7 points adrift at the time. Now in fifth, just 5 points adrift of Chelsea. So you'd have to argue, I know that people go, oh, it should be so much better. It is still an improvement.
It is an improvement, and it seems to be a crazy season where nobody seems to want to come fourth at the minute, whether it's Chelsea, whether it's Arsenal, Spurs as well are trying to get there, and us. And whenever a team gets there, they drop off points. So weirdly, even though the inconsistencies that we've had this season, we aren't actually that far off. And you're thinking, it's January now, and I know the transfer window's open and rumours are flying in left, right and centre, but if we can get a couple of bodies in and get playing again and find that consistency and get a couple of victories, maybe even three in a row, then we actually will start to climb the table. And even though you look at it, defeat against Arsenal, draw against Wolves, top four isn't out of reach at all.
No, it's certainly not out of reach. And we're going to be talking about those January transfer targets as well a bit later, boss. We've got Mark Flanagan, of course, our Northwest correspondent. He's going to be on the line. Wayne Barton, United historian and author, he's going to be joining us too. We'll hear from Jamie Jackson. He had plenty to say about the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer RVP sort of spat, I suppose you could say. Loved to hear that from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We'll get onto that later. And we're hearing from Thomas Bristow as well, who spoke to Paul Mortimer on the Weekend Breakfast of the World. Thomas Bristow of the MEN, Manchester Evening News. But you mentioned the Arsenal game there, Ben, in terms of you saying you were scratching your head and you couldn't quite figure it out, that is United losing four of their past five away Premier League visits to Arsenal alone. Of course, the away form hasn't been brilliant of late. What can you put that defeat down to?
It's a strange one because you look at Arsenal and you think they're not normally a team that we would struggle against. They haven't particularly got a great defence. You're looking at our strikers and thinking we've got the better than there, pace-wise. And the midfield, at times, has been pedestrian, at best with Ozil and Xhaka and Torreira in there. So you looked at the team, and I didn't fear the team at all that Arsenal put out. All right, they've got Aubameyang, Lacazette, Pepe. They've got good strikers on the pitch. But you went into the game, and I just felt we never really got out of first or second gear. We never really put our plan on the actual game and sort of came up with some tactics to try and beat them. So I don't know, it's a weird one, whether it is just this fact of we can't seem to put a run of victories together. And I know we are struggling at the minute with injuries, and I think that did have a key element of into that game, because you're looking at it and you're looking for options off the bench and there isn't much there. I think Solskjaer put his faith in Lingard because he normally has a good day out at the Emirates and he normally bags a goal, but he just didn't turn up at all.
He didn't. And that segues me into a subject that we're going to get out of the way early so it doesn't dominate proceedings, and that is Paul Pogba. Now, the reason Lingard segues into it is because apparently he's now working with Mino Raiola, which is quite the breaking news that has come out recently. I think it was Sports Mail that broke it. Whether that's true or not, we don't know. But Raiola, of course, Paul Pogba's agent as well. What do you make of everything that's gone on over the past 2 weeks or so, from Pogba dancing at his brother's wedding to Pogba's people, in inverted commas, saying that he needs to go for an operation, to Raiola saying that he's desperate to stay at Manchester United and win trophies, to Raiola saying that the problem is Manchester United, to Raiola just being Mino Raiola? We're going to get it out of the way because, like I said, I don't want this podcast, this show today, to be about Paul Pogba. But what's your take on everything?
It's just always a circus, isn't it? Whenever Paul Pogba is mentioned, there's always something behind it. And there's a story every single day. You look on Twitter, you look on any sort of website that gives you sports news, and it is just everything about Paul Pogba. There's no doubt he is an absolute world-class player, and I don't think anyone can really argue that. He's got the ability to get in pretty much any team in the league and in the world, at least the squad anyway. So you look at it, and if United want to sell him and put him on the market, the big teams, Real, Barca, Juve, they'll all be after him because of his ability. But it just seems to be that his place at United and his relationship with the club is never quite just met up. It's never married in the middle. And I think it just got to the point where I personally just think I'd rather see him go and see the back of him so we can actually get a proper structure in place, get players in there that we know we're playing each week, and that just won't have this circus, because I don't think Paul Pogba wants to be at Manchester United long term. So the reality is, if we were in a position where we could go out and get better players and we had a better squad, I don't think it'd be as big news as he is now.
Do you not? No?
I don't. I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's worth the circus.
Well, this is a tough one, isn't it? Because it doesn't look like he's going to move on in January, does it? I mean, especially with the injury now, it looks like Paul Pogba is going to be a Manchester United player. We saw him come on in that game against Watford. He seemed to make an impression. We know there are frailties in that United midfield, be it Scott McTominay, be it Fred, be it them desperate for a midfielder at the moment. And actually, we spoke to Thomas Bristow. He was speaking on Weekend Breakfast just earlier on today, speaking with Paul Mortimer and David Chidgey about Paul Pogba, about the performance from United at Molineux yesterday. Here is what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those displays where I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Wolves, especially at Molineux. They've been terrific. They've really built up a good reputation of playing well against the big sides. But obviously, that's no excuse for not getting a shot on target. It's a hard one, really. I think, obviously, you gave Greenwood a real good test last night. Martial was out ill. Rashford was on the bench for much of the game. So I think, yeah, it's a tough one. But I think you've got to give a lot of credit to Wolves for the way they played last night, to be honest.
And me and Chidge have been sitting here and disputing and arguing over our differing opinions on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and where he's taken Manchester United so far. I look at them and I just don't see any identity. I don't know what they are. A little bit like Solskjaer. I don't know what he is as a manager. I wonder how you, who's closer to it, view Manchester United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
I suppose Chidi's probably got the point of view, the fact that Lampard's in charge of Chelsea, so it's a very similar situation, isn't it? And I genuinely think that at the moment he's the best thing for Manchester United. I think, despite not being possibly the best tactician out there, when you look around and there's the likes of Pochettino available, I think what he's doing with Manchester United is instilling the right philosophy. You look at the three signings that came in the summer. They are all playing well. I mean, Maguire, in fairness, could probably play a little bit better. But you also look at the youth football that he's bringing through in Brandon Williams and the way that Mason Greenwood's come through this season. And I think even if he doesn't last long term, he's setting up Manchester United better for the future. So whether it be a case of that, he gets the signings that Manchester United definitely need, culls the players that definitely need to go, and someone else comes in like Pochettino, I think that is the answer. So for right now, I think I personally think he is the best thing for Manchester United.
Yeah, it's good to hear. It's good to hear anybody agree with me, really, Tom. It doesn't happen very often, but I think that's bang on. But the key thing you just said there, it's time, isn't it? It's how patient can they be? Now, my own theory on this, you might find bizarre, but I'd love to run this past you. I think that Man United are almost uniquely positioned amongst Premier League clubs to be more patient than all of them as well, because their revenue, they're such a big club that they can probably afford even to be out of the Champions League for a year or two, because it won't diminish their standing in world football. It won't diminish their appeal to footballers wanting to come, because they've got so much money they can pay them what they want. So actually, I think that they're uniquely positioned to have the time and the patience with somebody like Ollie, who can, you know, basically bring them back to that culture and that identity that Mortz and I were talking about a few minutes ago. Would you agree with that?
I don't agree with it, but carry on.
I agree with it to an extent. Because it's a case of how long can you stay out of the Champions League? They're already out this season. Can they stay out for a second and then a third? So I think it's, I agree with you to a certain extent. And any manager needs time to rebuild. Solskjaer, obviously with the philosophy he's got, it's going to take time to put the right signings in. You know, you're not going to sign Maddison overnight. They probably won't get him in January. If they want him in summer, they're going to have to wait for that. And then that's another season, isn't it, that's gone by. So obviously, yes, these things take time. Obviously, the comparison that gets banded around a lot is Klopp at Liverpool. It took him quite a few years to
build, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and that's all credit to Liverpool for sticking by him. And I mean, I think that in fairness, they could see where he was going with Liverpool, and obviously now everyone's reaping the rewards.
May I say, Thomas, so the thing about Klopp, so everyone talks about Klopp, and you can't compare him with Ollie because he'd already won in Germany, and he'd already built a side.
Proven manager.
It's a proven manager who'd built a side, and you look at Dortmund and and how they are with creating, you know, attacking really expansive and expressive sides. You look at Manchester United, and like I said, I'm not sure what they are, but I wanted to ask you about Pogba. And how you solve a problem like Pogba, and also has Pogba become a millstone round Man United and Solskjaer's neck?
Yes, it's a strange one, Pogba. I think the injury this season as well has not helped things, has it? I mean, he's definitely not going anywhere in January. Whether what Manchester United decide to do with him at the end of the season is anybody's guess, to be honest with you. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? And I think in many ways that's unlucky for Solskjaer, that he's got an 89 million player. Well, I think everybody agrees he's world class when he turns up, just not playing at all this season. So it's a difficult situation. I mean, what I believe should happen is, well, I mean, they're not going to sell him in January anyway. That's definitely not going to happen. If they can get him playing before the end of the season, if he can come back from this injury and play, and United somehow get top four, then it could probably change everything. If he continues to not play in the summer, then, well, given Solskjaer's track record of trying to get rid of the players that don't fit in with his club philosophy, then I think you could probably read between the lines.
That was Thomas Bristow there of the Manchester Evening News, speaking to Paul Mortimer and Dave Chidgey on Love Sports Weekend Breakfast. You can catch them every Sunday morning between 8 p.m. and 12 p.m. And he was saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the best thing for United right now. He also believes that Paul Pogba is going nowhere in January. Myself and Ben will be reflecting on that and looking ahead to the fixtures coming up, of course, for Manchester United. A big Manchester derby in the Carabao Cup coming up in midweek. That's to come here on the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
I don't know Robin. Robin doesn't know me. He probably doesn't have a right to criticise my management style, and I won't change. That's definite. And Robin, yeah, he took my number 20, and that's probably all he's going to take from me as well.
Oh, we love it. We love a bit of a spat between ex-player and current manager, ex-player slash pundit in Robin van Persie, claiming that it feels like Manchester United players lack fear with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He said that after the defeat to Arsenal. And it was nice to see, wasn't it, Ben? It was nice to see Ole bite back with a bit of bolshiness in his post-match.
It was a bit of a different side to him, wasn't it? It was nice.
Yeah, loved it. Well, we also spoke to Jamie Jackson. He was speaking to Ewan Thomas on Weekend Breakfast too. Jamie Jackson, the Manchester United football correspondent at The Guardian and Observer. Here's his take.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, I obviously sit through most of his press conferences, games, etc. I've never seen him angry before. That's easy. He's the angriest I've ever seen him. And it's also interesting that he did reference the number 20 jersey, because you could think that, you know, he's had a little think about what he's going to say if it comes up, you know, to sort of go into that detail. I'm not too sure really why he's got so cheesed off about it, because, you know, that Van Persie's a pundit. If you were at that game or watching that game, working on that game, as he obviously was, it wasn't a great performance at the Arsenal one. They obviously lost 2-0. And you know, I haven't actually seen the clip, but I've read the quotes from Van Persie. By all accounts, he was sort of saying, well, you know, it's not great to smile, but it's interesting. I actually quite like it. I think, you know, why not, if he wants to have a little go back. It was interesting. It was the very, very last question. And I don't think he played it on your clip, but as he was walking away, possibly from the mics, why he didn't pick it up, he also said, he said something like, I'm not medieval. He used the word medieval as if to say, that's not my management style. So quite lively, really, which is obviously, you know, what we kind of like as journalists and in the media. You know, Ferguson, what did he say about Real Madrid ahead of eventually selling Ronaldo? I wouldn't sell that lot of virus, I believe he said. You know, you could say he was biting then. I get where you're coming from. If he were winning a lot more and sort of, you know, 10 points clear of the Premier League, then maybe there won't be so much scrutiny on the fact that he is possibly biting. I mean, as part of being a high-profile manager, especially at Manchester United. But other fans are saying, good, we need a little bit more steel, a little bit more sort of public kind of utterances from him, because some fans do think Solskjaer could be a bit passive. But you are correct. It is a little bit or very much out of the ordinary for him to do this. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing. I mean, it was at the end of yet another press conference in which we sort of peppered him with questions about Paul Pogba, which is understandable, of course, because, you know, for all the reasons we'll probably discuss in a second. And maybe he just... But what was interesting was, it was the last question. It was almost an afterthought of a question. But there he was, ready to answer. So it is interesting.
It is interesting indeed. That was Jamie Jackson, the United football correspondent for The Guardian and Observer, reacting to the news, or the quotes from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer after RVP, Robin van Persie, claimed that United players lack fear and that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer shouldn't have been smiling after the defeat to Arsenal. Ben, his response to RVP saying, you know, he took my number, that's all he's going to take from me. Was that a bite from Ole?
I think quite possibly, but you don't mind to see it because, look, I mean, Van Persie criticising Ole for smiling, there was a lot more wrong with United that game than Solskjaer smiling. And I think whether he smiled, he frowned, if he came out and was moody and angry to the post-match television cameras, then we'd have been criticising for that. So I don't think he's wrong in biting back, but I don't know. You want to just see, if he then goes on to put more aggression into this United side and we see that on the pitch, then, hey, everyone's looking and thinking that's a good thing.
It's not a problem, is it? I like the bolshiness. Part of me goes, do you know what? I don't think you need to validate what Van Persie has said by referencing his number. And Jamie made a good point there, saying it's almost like he's thought about it. He was waiting for the question and ready to respond with his little quip.
Yeah, it's like he's practiced it before he went in. And the little line about not being medieval as well. I did think, I'm not sure why he's thrown that in there, but it did seem to be thinking about what he was saying a lot. Just a thought, I wonder what Dalot thinks being the current number 20.
Yeah, that is a great point. To be fair, Paul Mortimer on The Breakfast Show, he said that it's an own goal by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
You know what? He shouldn't even be giving it airtime. Van Persie can say what he wants. He's not a manager. He's never managed. He has no clue of what Solskjaer's going through because he sees it from another point of view.
Yeah.
So his opinion is irrelevant. But by commenting on it, he makes it relevant.
Obviously, he was being critical of the fact that Solskjaer seemed to be smiling after a 2-0 defeat in a press conference. But I don't know, maybe that's his body language. Maybe he's looking on the bright side of life. I don't know, but it's just his demeanour, I suppose.
Yeah, but there's two things about that, as far as I'm concerned. You've been beat. You haven't played well. Managers are salesmen. They sell a way of being, a belief to the players and to everyone else. Now, part of the sell is how you present yourself. Now, what Robin Van Persie is probably saying is he looks a little bit weak when he's laughing and doing all of that. Now, if you've got that swagger, if you're Jurgen Klopp and you've got that swagger and you can laugh about it, people see that as, you know what, yeah, he's all right. He's, you know, he's real. And Solskjaer, even when they play well, he's full of cliches that aren't his. You really don't know what he is. Because I don't think he really comes over as someone who knows, fully understands and knows what he's doing. That's my opinion. So I can see where Robin Van Persie is coming from. But, you know, he should know better as an ex-player.
Yeah.
But when you're a pundit, you actually are working towards a different audience, aren't you?
Well, that was Paul Mortimer there with Ewan Thomas speaking on The Weekend Breakfast, which you can catch on Love Sport between 8 a.m. and 12 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. What do you make of this, Ben? Because I've heard a lot from these ex-players on Love Sport, and they're all good mates of mine, and they're all lovely blokes, and if you're listening, fellas, a lot of time for you. But Paul Mortimer is one. Brian Statham is another ex-Spurs and Brentford player, of course, who is often on The Score on Saturday afternoons, and they are not big fans of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer whatsoever. And Mort's there has said that Ole uses clichés, that he basically doesn't really know what he's going out there to say, that he's just picking off quotes that other people have said, and he looks like a man who's essentially out of his depth. I'm not sure I agree with that.
It's very, very critical. And look, Solskjaer has had bad things to this season. He's brought bad things to this United side in the sense that the inconsistency, but you can see what he's trying to do. And what have we said over the past few years when we've had Mourinho, Van Gaal, and we've just said they just don't get United. All right, we can go and win a Europa League with Mourinho, we can go and win a FA Cup with Van Gaal, but you don't see United on the pitch, you don't see that connection with the fans. And I think that is one thing that Solskjaer has brought back, because you rewind and we go back to last season with Mourinho and the football was dire, the feeling around the club was even worse. So I think you've got to give Solskjaer credit where credit is due, and the structure at Man United is not in place for a manager to come in and do a world-class job straight away. So look, I've been critical of Solskjaer, and we both have been on this show. I think that's right. I think he deserves criticism because he's in one of the best clubs in the world, if not the best job in the world in football. So I think he deserves the criticism, but he is trying to implement a style on this club, and he's trying to bring what United means onto the pitch. He's inexperienced, and I think that shows with the team, that shows with the results. I think the fact that he has only got Mulder and Cardiff on his managerial CV does show. So is he unqualified, underqualified, maybe slightly, but he's trying to do the best with the tools that he's got. And I think if he had the structure in place, like a club of Liverpool or City stature at the minute, and we had them board of directors, we had the executive of football or whatever you want to call it, in charge of transfers and recruitment, we had the whole structure in place, and we weren't talking about Ed Woodward every week, then actually I think Solskjaer would be doing a lot better than he is now.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know about you, but I am sick and tired of these win percentages just being thrust in front of my face. Someone, we were doing a show the other day, and someone gave me a sheet of paper, win percentages, Manchester United managers. Now, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer right at the bottom on 27% or whatever it is that he's on. Sir Matt Busby was in the list. Well, why are you throwing Sir Matt Busby at me? Yes, him and Sir Alex were the greatest managers of Manchester United there have ever been. Arguably the greatest managers ever in British football. Liverpool fans will argue with that. Of course they will. But don't be comparing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to Sir Matt Busby. We are talking about two astronomically different eras, right? So you can't compare that for one. And when you talk about perception, yeah, that is part of it. That is part of the fan experience. And like you say, you go back to the football under Mourinho. You go back to life at Manchester United under Jose Mourinho, which was horrible. Seeing Marouane Fellaini run around like a headless chicken. Yes, he was signed by David Moyes. But to see him still there as a focal point of Mourinho's side under Louis van Gaal, pretty turgid. Yes, we won an FA Cup. Yes, we won a Carabao Cup and a Europa League under Jose. But I didn't enjoy being a Manchester United fan then. Right now, rightly or wrongly, I'm enjoying it. United are fifth. Yes, he's not got a good win percentage as those other managers. But United are fifth. He's trying to implement a strategy, an identity. He wants to sign young English players. I'm all right with it. And if he's got a lower win percentage, so be it. The fan experience for me is better.
Yep, I think spot on. I think the football is better. I think it is inconsistent. And I think with Solskjaer, what you've got to do, if you're Woodward or whoever's in charge of the club and the funds, you've got to give him everything that he needs to succeed at the job. That means transfers. I know we spent a lot in the summer. We've got to go again in January and we've got to go again next summer. I think if it comes to the end of the season and we've brought in this month a couple of players, whether they be midfielders, defenders, forwards, whatever Solskjaer thinks he wants to build this United team, I think you've got to give him the money this month, the next 6 months, and then see where we're at in the summer and assess it again. But he's doing the best he can with a very, very depleted squad. If you bring in say, who's the top managers in the league, in the world? You look at Guardiola and Klopp. If they come into this United side now and were to manage this United side, they won't be doing much better. Okay, they might be better managers, they might be better personalities, they might be able to get more out of a team. But you look at United's squad and that's not set up to do much better than where it is at this current moment in time.
Yep, I agree. And just to finish on this particular topic before we move on, ex-players, ex-United players passing comment. And I do have a fear about the class of 92, maybe going, I don't know, not becoming parodies of themselves. Gary Neville is a different case altogether because he's an expert on Sky Sports and he's brilliant at what he does. But the likes of Paul Scholes, and yes, his comments about Liverpool winning the Club World Cup not really mattering, I think were taking out of context. But Robin van Persie now speaking, and I know that's his job again, and these pundits are paid to make controversial statements in order to get headlines and clickbait, etc., etc., etc. But is there a fear? And Zlatan, to be fair, called the class of 92 out, didn't he, when he was at United, or perhaps just after he left, and said, all they do is pipe up. Yes, you had a great era, but your era has gone. Let the players on the field get on with what they need to get on with.
Very true. And it was a total different era of football, like you said. The class of 92 will always be, well, the best group of young players to come through at a time at one club in United's history and possibly in anyone's history in world football. So I think to compare this current side to that side is just, it's worlds apart. And we're just in a totally different era. Like, football in general works in cycles. And I think, do you know what? I would love us to be winning, like we were saying before, 1, 2, 3 league titles in a row. But the reality is we can't do that every year. You can't win the title every single year unless you're PSG in France. But the thing is that we've got to just accept where we are right now. It is a rebuilding job. It might take a few years, but we can't keep changing it every season because then where will it be?
Yep. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at the wheel. Fine for me. Fine for Ben Senior too. Is it fine for you? Get in touch. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Next up, it's United historian and author Wayne Barton.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Manchester United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, and Ben Senior with you through to 9 p.m. this evening. Of course, the Sunday fan shows have returned for another year here at Love Sport. Plenty more coming up over the course of the next few hours, so stay tuned for that. It's Sheffield United next at 9. Then we've got Swansea, Norwich coming up, Sunderland coming up. But right now, it's all about the Red Devils. And we are going to be looking ahead to the Carabao Cup semi-final clash, of course, with Manchester City. The first time the two teams have met at this stage of the competition since 2010. United winning on that occasion with a last-minute Wayne Rooney goal in that second leg. That was a good game, wasn't it? Carlos Tevez bagging a couple of goals in that one. I think three across both legs. And then next up, it's Norwich City in the Premier League. To talk about that and plenty more, we've got Wayne Barton, United historian and author, on the line. Hello, Wayne.
Hi, Matt. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, boss. Great to have you back with us. Now, listen, before we go any further, we've had you on the show talking about United's history on a number of occasions, and we celebrated a few weeks ago that United had gone 4,000 consecutive games with an academy product in their side. But you have found a little flaw in that stat. It might not be entirely accurate.
Yeah, by the club's official records, and I stress this is by the club's official records because I think there's a grey area that I tend to agree with here. The club's official records say that that Everton game, which was recognised as the 4,000th, was actually the 3986 on the club's records. The figure is recognised by another historian, Tony Park, who has done a load of research on United youth records, and he's been counting down to this. But that record actually counts a lot of competitions that United don't recognise officially, such as Anglo-Italian Cup for one, and Screen Sports Super Cup, the domestic cup that was set up after Heysel. So there are a few of those in there, but the club actually officially don't recognise that until a little later this month, which is a bit jumbled up, you know, with the replays against Wolves and everything. So we're not actually quite sure when the 4,000th game will officially be. But it's a strange one with the club, because I'm not sure that they will recognise it when it actually happens, because they did recognise it against
yeah, it's already
Edmonton.
Happened.
Yeah, and that's a strange thing. I did speak to the club about this, and their official stance is that they've got no plans to go back and revise the records. So there you go.
Right, so there you go. So we don't know when it is, but it kind of has happened. And if it hasn't happened, it's going to happen within the course of the next few games or so.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So,
I'm glad that's sorted.
Yeah, so there we go. That's sorted, that's fine. We'll move on. Fine, United have got 4,000. We'll celebrate it. It's done. Everybody can cheer. Now, I want to quickly touch on the game with Wolves, of course, yesterday. And we didn't speak about this, Ben, to be fair. But I don't know about you two. Brandon Williams was fouled, right? He was fouled in the area, and they went to VAR, and they looked at it, and it showed that he'd been fouled, and yet the pundits looked at it, some of them, and said, no, quite clearly not a foul. Am I missing something here? That was a penalty, right?
Wayne? For me, yeah. I'm going to say, yeah, it was. But then we saw the Dele Alli thing a few weeks ago, you know, with the handball, which should have technically been given on the laws of the game. Now, if you're asking me as a viewer of football, would I have wanted to see that penalty given yesterday? Probably not. And the same way a few weeks ago, if I had seen Dele Alli's goal, in the spirit of football, do I want to see it given? Probably, yeah, I do. But on the law, on the letter of the law, the way that things are at the moment, you know, we're all told to believe if there is contact, it's a penalty. And there was contact, and it wasn't a penalty. I can't believe that it wasn't given. Having said that, United, I don't think, did enough to win the game. But, for me, it was a penalty in terms of the letter of the law, however soft it would have been.
I couldn't agree more with that. And just to touch on, I thought United really lacked in midfield yesterday. And there's rumours coming out, well, at the back end of this week, that the club have put a bid in for James Maddison, Leicester City's James Maddison, of £45 million plus Lingard. Now, I don't know if you know anything more about this or if in fact it's true at all.
Well, I don't think I think United are definitely interested in, I'm not sure about the bid, United are definitely interested in Maddison. That's a long-standing interest that they've got. We were weak yesterday. You've got to look at that midfield, and it's probably, in terms of senior figures, it's probably the weakest that United could have fielded. Now, the issue isn't whether or not United could, they need to strengthen on yesterday's midfield. It's whether they need to strengthen once Pogba and McTominay fit. And I still think that's a weak midfield. So we're not asking Maddison to come in and be better than what we saw yesterday. We're asking him to improve what is our first choice. And I still think he would do that. So that's the biggest issue. You know, yesterday we were treading water. It was a poor performance. But I think when many people saw that lineup, they were probably expecting Wolves to win by a clear couple of goals. So, you know, we did. It's a weird one. We played poorly, but probably better than what most people expected us to. We definitely need strengthening in midfield. I love Maddison. He's a very much United type of player. He's got that little bit of swagger. He tries something different when he plays. He's got no fear against playing against big teams. And you know, I hate to play along that stereotypical line with Ollie and his signings, but he's British, so he'll understand a little bit better about playing for United. Having said that, £45 million and Jesse Lingard, Do you think that's going to get him?
Absolutely not a hope in hell can you expect to get James Maddison for that kind of offer, I would imagine. That is definitely one, surely, that's either come out of the Ed Woodward book of How Do I Sign Players, or it's been completely fabricated. I said I wasn't going to mention it again on the show, but since we've got you on, Wayne, I just want to very quickly touch on Paul Pogba and Mino Raiola and the deal involving Erling Haaland, of course, going to Borussia Dortmund, and the conspiracy theories surrounding this one as well, that Raiola only kind of sanctioned that move because he didn't have anything to do with it, in order to then see Haaland move on to United or whoever it may be for 100 plus million and for him to get a nice little cut. But the deal with Pogba right now, it looks like he's probably not going to leave in January, or at least that's what we're potentially led to think now. Ole is still very forthright on that particular issue, but what's your take on everything that's occurred over the past couple of weeks? And I asked Ben this too, in terms of his dancing at his brother's wedding, being back in the side, then his people saying he needed to go and have an operation, and Ollie saying, OK, I need to speak to Paul about that, and then Raiola coming out and criticising the club. I mean, it's all just a massive, massive mess, isn't it?
Yeah, I had a conversation with one former United manager who shall remain nameless. He was asking me about, you know, what actually happened. He said, surely they've not let Pogba go to Miami and Dubai. That can't be true, because he's a little bit older and he's not on social media. And I said, no, it is true. He's been there having the time of his life by the look of it. But yeah, I think it's one of those things that nobody can believe that he's actually gone and done that sort of stuff. I don't think it's very professional. I know people can say that, you know, when he's injured, he's not on the club's time. He is on the club's time. He's contracted to play for Manchester United. And in those contracts, if they're not fit to play, they should be doing ambassadorial duties. They should be working with the local community and things like that. They are contracted. They're not ill from, you know what I mean? They don't have to take, they haven't got a sick note to take a couple of weeks from work. He's earning hundreds of thousands of pounds a week. He should be in Manchester, continue his rehabilitation and doing things on the club's behalf, representing the club, and he hasn't been doing that. And, you know, all this stuff, I think United, one of the biggest controversial issues of the last few years, and it stems back to when Jose came in to United, he got into bed with Mino Raiola, and it brought a load of players in that summer, didn't he? It was Ibrahimovic and Mkhitaryan as well, and they were all his clients. And we've been hamstrung by that ever since. And it is one of those things where I like Pogba as a player. He's obviously our most talented outfield player. Is he worth the investment, and is he worth this kind of hassle? There are better players that we've got rid of that haven't been worth the hassle at some point or another. David Beckham was cut out to be made an example of. Roy Keane was cut out to be made an example of. And, you know, it's a difficult one for Solskjaer, because I don't think he's solid enough in the position at the moment to be making that kind of statement. However, he was solid enough to make that kind of statement with Lukaku and Sanchez. But with Pogba, it's obviously a different kettle of fish. I'm not very happy. I don't think that most United fans are seeing these kind of things about Pogba, and less enamoured even so by, even still by, Raiola's comments as well. You don't like to hear it, and it's got nothing to do with United, and he should just keep his nose out. And, you know, every time you hear him say something, it's never complimentary. This is a guy who's earned tens of millions of pounds from working with Manchester United. And it's, for me, if we were not associated with him, that would make my following United a much more pleasurable experience.
Indeed it would. Wayne, thank you very much for joining us as always. That was Wayne Barton there, United historian and author. You can find him at waynebartonbooks.com. And the message there, really, Ben, the underlying message is keep your nose out, Mino. Keep your nose out. Mark Flanagan coming up next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Man United fan show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, and Ben Senior with you until 9 p.m. So that is another 10 minutes or so. Manchester United, of course, a club with centre-backs stacked to the brim. You're talking Maguire, you're talking Phil Jones, you're talking Eric Bailly, you're talking Chris Smalling on loan, of course, at Roma. You're talking Axel Tuanzebe. And you're talking Marcus Rojo, who does remain at Manchester United, despite the fact that he was pictured wearing a PSG top, Ben, over the Christmas period.
Yeah, as far as I can understand, it came off his brother's Instagram, And I think they were doing a stadium tour somewhere. I'm not quite sure what club. But yeah, he chose to wear this season's PSG shirt.
Brilliant. I love the fact that when everybody thought he was maybe moving to Paris, no one said, great, you've been a great servant for us, Marcos. We loved every minute of you. Everyone just went, hang on a second. We've looked at Rojo's stats. He never got sent off for Man United.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he plays football like a madman at sometimes. And the amount of two-footed tackles you've seen him going into, I can't believe he's not been red carded.
Just amazing, isn't it? Rojo, never sent off. Well, he's still here. So, listen, once he's fit, once he's firing, maybe he'll be back in that Manchester United starting lineup. And a man who might not be in the starting lineup for the Carabao Cup against Manchester City this week is Harry Maguire. He picked up a knock in the game against Wolves, so he may not be included. To talk all about that, we've got Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent, on the line. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Ben.
Evening, mate.
Mate, great to have you. Great to have you back on. I know you've been on the station a fair few times since the new year, but a good Christmas and new year for yourself?
Yes, I was talking a lot about football on Love Sport Radio during Christmas, yeah. in between drinking alcohol. So I hope it all made sense.
I'm sure it did. It always does where you're concerned, Mark.
Oh, good.
Let's look ahead. We're not going to look back anymore at the Wolves game. Oh, by the way, my theory. So I had a theory, by the way, on the no shots on target. It wasn't really a theory. It was just a clutch at a straw, because the stat coming out of that game, United didn't have a single shot on target since whenever records began or whatever it was. But they did. I'm saying they did. That shot from Marcus Rashford, that was on target.
It was on target until it was deflected onto the bar. So, yeah, he shot on target, didn't he?
He did.
I completely agree. Yeah.
He should have scored as well, to be fair. He just needed to delay once more because Conor Cody went early to ground. If he just delayed, a bit like he did a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember, I think it might have been against Newcastle when he delayed and scored a great goal on that one. If he just delayed, he probably would have scored. But it goes to a replay. And now we look forward to the Carabao Cup against Manchester City, Mark. This will be an interesting one.
Yeah, you have to wonder what team Ollie can put out if Maguire's not fit. It does raise a number of questions. If, funnily enough, actually, if Manchester United can beat Wolves in that replay, this would be the first of, I think, 8 games until February the 1st. So injuries would be a huge, huge issue now with the squad so thin. Obviously, you know, you mentioned about the midfield, but even defensively, who comes in if Maguire doesn't play? You're going to Phil Jones. Fosu Mensah is coming back. He hasn't played for 2 years. So do have.
Oh, we look like we've lost the line there with Mark Flanagan. We'll try and get him back as soon as we can. Timothy Fosu Mensah, by the way. I'd love to see him back in. I love him.
Yeah.
Not only for the chant. Let's go Fosu Mensah. Let's go Fosu Mensah. Love that chant. And really like Timothy Fosu Mensah. Of course, it didn't work out for him on loan spells with Palace, with Fulham. They lambasted him, to be fair. Said he was nowhere near the player that he could have been for Manchester United. Mark is back with us, I believe. Mark?
Hi, Matt.
Still there. No worries, boss. We lost you at Timothy Fosu Mensah.
Yeah, you never thought you were going to say that tonight, did you?
Did not, mate. Did not, but I'm happy. I'm happy about it. I do like him. Of course, he came in under Louis van Gaal as a 17-year-old at the time.
Yeah, I was just saying about the players they've got coming back in Tuanzebe. Did you hear me say about Tuanzebe?
No.
Right, well, he's due back in a couple of weeks as well. So they do have cover in that position. But McTominay, I think we probably won't see him until the end of March. And we don't know what's going to happen with Pogba. And City, Pep always puts a really strong team out. He doesn't really rest players that much for cup competitions. So promises to be a tough night, really.
Yeah, of course, there is the history there where United did this back in 2010 and beat them. Carlos Tevez, I think they beat them as well since then, haven't they, in the past 10 years or so in a random EFL Cup game. I can't remember what year it was. But
yeah,
United,
about 5 years ago, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
13, 14, yeah.
So in terms of history in the competition, it's not too bad. It's then Norwich, of course, next Saturday. Norwich in desperate need for a win. They do have the classic along come Norwich saying whereby, you know, they're there to break a record or start a record. And you can just see this one happening, can't you? Just like it happened against Arsenal.
Yeah, because they've been playing quite well, haven't they? And just not getting the result and not getting the rub of the green. I do worry about the accumulation of games for United. That's going forward. I think it's going to be a huge issue. And against Arsenal, you were talking about the game. they just were really outplayed first half. I thought Arsenal were brilliant in the first half and just didn't have the legs to sort of take it through. And United once again highlighted the lack of ability in the centre of the park. I mean, we've got Matic and Fred now. It's difficult to think of a worse central pairing that United have had in the Premier League era. Without McTominay as backup, if Fred gets injured, then who have you got next on the ladder? You know, who's coming in behind? I'm not sure. It's a really difficult period that they're going to have to. The dominoes are going to have to fall really well for United to come out of this smelling of roses.
Mark, you mentioned the injuries and the lack of depth in the squad. Obviously, it's January now in the transfer window. Who do you see United going for and realistically getting in the door this window?
Well, that's two very different issues, which is being a huge problem. I mean, you mentioned about the Maddison offer plus Lingard. I'm not sure whether that's true. If it is true, it just highlights an enormous problem that they would even consider doing something like that, offering that to Leicester. And I think that's a credible offer, which highlights a big problem. But the player that they really want is the lad from Lille, Samara, who is available for about €60 million. Lille have made it clear that they're prepared to sell him at a price. He's 20, he's tall, he gets around the pitch. The problem is he's very, very highly rated and he's talking to a number of clubs. I think Spurs are among those, Arsenal and Chelsea, and a couple on the continent as well. If they can get that over the line, it'd be fantastic. We know about the guy from Portugal, Fernandes.
Jadson Fernandes, yeah.
Yeah, who this, they've been talking about this deal to bring him on loan and then pay possibly $35 million in the summer. We now understand that West Ham have made a pretty serious bid and he's maybe edging towards West Ham, which obviously raises a sort of alarm bell in terms of if West Ham can outmuscle United and sell the dream better than United, then that's slightly worrying as well. So I just think that in terms of the January transfer window, it's highly unlikely that they'll get either of those two players or they certainly won't get a Maddison or anybody like that. What's likely to happen is someone a little bit left field in the way that Martial slightly came out of nowhere. There's so much speculation about so many players, it makes you dizzy just sort of considering it. We know that there's always a lot of hot air around United, and also they're used as well as part of a bargaining tool when players are trying to sign new contracts as well. If you get linked with United, it certainly helps when you're trying to get your contract improved.
Indeed it does, Mark. Mate, it's been great having you on. Just before you go, very quickly, all happy? Happy and rosy at United? Are you happy with things since we last spoke on this show? Of course, that 4-1 win over Newcastle. So it's two wins, one defeat and a draw. Everything's fine, right? Everything's good.
It's not bad. It's been worse. But I just worry for the next couple of months. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just think it's not likely to improve. That's my big worry.
Mm. Mark Flanagan.
Sorry, Matt.
No,
sorry,
mate,
Matt.
No, I expected nothing less. Do you not worry? That was Mark Flanagan there, our Northwest correspondent. And he's right, isn't he? He's bang on, really. And a great point made about that offer, which we haven't gone into too much depth about, really, that Ed Woodward, or whoever it is that has submitted whatever offer that might be to Leicester, to think that you could pay $45 million plus Jesse Lingard for James Maddison in today's climate, considering that Jesse Lingard and the stat that goes around is that he didn't score or assist a single goal in the Premier League throughout last year, is just bonkers.
It's got to be a joke, and it? Someone's got to have pulled a Christmas cracker and got that in the middle. I'm not buying it at all, because you're looking at James Maddison and you're thinking, that's the best part of a £100 million player there, and Jesse Lingard isn't quite worth that much.
No, he's not. Ben, before you go, it is Manchester City first up in the first leg of the Carabao Cup, of course. Two legs in the semi-finals. Hosting City on Tuesday, then hosting Norwich next Saturday. Your prediction for both?
I think we've come again to another week where we say it's a big week for United. And I think we need two wins out of two. And I think we might just about get him. He's got the tactics there to beat City, and Norwich will have as well.
Yep, he's got the blueprint, of course, wins against both earlier on in the season, and pretty comprehensive wins, you have to say, too. This has been the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Spot. We'll be back next week with our new time, don't forget, 8 p.m. on Sunday evenings. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.